Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. Rookies are here. Veterans are starting to trickle in, and we are getting set for the start of the NFL season. So many things going on. There's a lot of stuff going on with the NFLPA. Former Browns offensive lineman J.C. Treader resigning. And so now they're looking for an interim executive director, and, you know, all on the heels of some collusion stuff going on, and there is no better guy to talk to. You see him nationally on TV all the time, and when you want to know what's going on in the NFL, you just simply go to Pro Football Talk, and Mike Florio is there with everything you need to know. And right now he is on the Fan hotline. Mike, how are you, my friend? Thank you for joining us today.
Hey, doing great. How are you guys?
Hi, Mike.
We're good. Hey, before we get into the football stuff, tell me about Big Shield. You got another book. How do you do this, man? You're writing like 15 articles a day on Pro Football Talk, and then you're squeezing in another book. What's Big Shield about?
Big Shield is a story of gambling, the mob, and professional football, but not the National Football League. My lawyers have required me, i.e. me, to emphasize at every turn the teams depicted in Big Shield are not NFL teams. And if you want to think they are, I can't stop you. But, you know, there's a team in Baltimore. There's a team involved in Las Vegas. There's a team in Minneapolis. There are a few teams that come up in the course of Big Shield. But it all flows from a concern I've had as it relates to the NFL and the controversies that could undermine the best interests of the league, the integrity of the sport, et cetera. And inside information has been something fascinating to me because there's so much of it and so many people have it. And what could, under the wrong set of circumstances, someone do to profit from making inside information available to mobsters who are trying to rig the bets in their favor, either before games, you know, the stuff we've always suspected, someone is telling someone else who's truly injured, what's the game plan going to be, who's going to get the ball, etc. But in this age of real-time in-game betting, what if you had someone on the sideline who was given a signal before the play to somebody who might be watching through a real-time connection? And this thing is set in the not-too-distant future where everything is real-time, so you pull up your streaming app and you're seeing it as it's happening. What if there's somebody who's managed to get in the shot right behind the coach of the many different camera angles that you can pick as you're watching the game, and you've got a steady cam on the coach, and you can see a guy standing back there who's grabbing his helmet and letting go of his face mask if it's a run, or putting his hand on his face mask and leaving it there if it's a pass? How hard would that be to put something like that together? And then you've got people out there who watch it and they act on it. And that's just the premise for the story that unfolds between three main characters who initially the connections aren't clear, but as you get deeper into it, it becomes more clear how they interconnect. And it just kind of goes from there. But, you know, the NFL will probably hate the story because it makes pro football look corrupt. I think at a deeper level, they should love it because it brings to life what could happen if they're not vigilant about it. And it shows the consequences to a player who would decide to try to make some easy money by providing inside information to somebody who takes it and then bets with it.
I'm just having flashbacks. ESPN show, was it Playmakers? Remember that? Yeah. They weren't real happy about that.
No, they hated that. They made them shut it down. They were an NFL broadcast partner, and they made them shut it down. But this isn't an NBC book. This is a Just Me book. And if they want to squeeze NBC to fire me, I can't stop them from doing it. It probably wouldn't be the first time they've tried.
My guess is if you need a gig, you can call our guys, and we'll get you in.
Well,
if they happen to.
Yeah, if you're bored, you're always welcome in Cleveland. How's that sound?
Here's the thing about the website that I founded 25 years ago next November. I own 100% of the equity.
Yes.
So if NBC ever kicks me to the curb, I'll pack up the bus and drive it somewhere else.
Well, if they do, it's their mistake. We know that.
Yes. And they've been very, you know, we're kind of having fun here. Mm-hmm. They have put up with a lot by way of, you know, complaints that come either from the league, from other media companies, because, you know, they don't like it when their people get called out for not doing their jobs the way that I think they should. They have played defense and run interference for me very well for 16 years, so I've got no complaints. I admire and respect them. That the cowardly thing to do would be to just cut me loose, and they've never even considered that.
Well, you do awesome. A great job for yes, them, and we absolutely love the website. The NFL Players Association has a mess going on here. And J.C. Treader, the former Brown, apparently the latest situation that's come up there. What's the future of the NFLPA, Mike? And do you think it's ever done a good job for its workforce?
Well, the question isn't whether or not the people in leadership have done a good job for the workforce. The question is whether the workforce cares enough to empower leadership to do a good job. And one of the basic realities of the NFL Players Association, as it relates to the mindset of its members, there's a gross imbalance in willingness to use the nuclear option. The owners would shut the sport down for a season if they had to get what they want. The players will not miss a game. They will not miss a game check. And we blindly line up behind the oligarchs. They're the ones who would take football away from us for a year. The players will never take football away from us. Now, they went on strike in 1982 and again in 1987, but 1987 is when it became obvious that it doesn't work. Work stoppages don't work for players. They've only got so many years to play. They want to play. They don't want to give that up. And they'll do the best deal they can to allow themselves to do the thing they love. They love the sport enough to not shut it down. The owners will shut it down in order to get better terms in the next CBA. And I think people need to understand that and maybe have a little more sympathy or empathy, whichever the right word is there, for the players, because the players tend to get screwed. And what's happened is the league has weaponized the fact that the players won't go on strike and that the players generally are disengaged and they don't really care. They've weaponized that against them for the past 15 years, dating back to the 2011 CBA. And I think more recently, the NFLPA non-player leadership has taken advantage of, and maybe some of the player leaders have taken advantage of, the fact that the rank and file just doesn't care and we can do whatever we want to do. So a lot of the chaos happening now dates back to the hiring process for Lloyd Howell. He was very secretive. The players didn't even know who the candidates were. The players who voted on the candidates didn't find out who they were until they showed up for the meeting. There was a lot of stuff about that was wrong, and is evidenced by everything that's happened over the past 6 weeks and how it's all fallen apart, probably not the best way to go to cloak everything in secrecy.
Mm. Mike, we're playing Wheel of Quarterback here in Cleveland. We have four or five, if you really want to look at it, but we really have four quarterbacks that could be starting when the season starts. Who is your money on?
I think it's going to be Joe Flacco until whichever of the two rookies is more ready to go. Mm. And, you know, unless the Browns start winning and winning and winning and winning and there's no reason to pivot away from Flacco, I still think Kenny Pickett will be the odd man out. I don't think you can take four guys to camp. Now, it looks like he's going to make it to camp, but this is what happens when you separate winning from management of assets and leverage for future draft picks, and we're going to play this game, this chief strategy officer game from Paul DePodesta about, you know, and it goes back to the 2017-2018 time frame when they prioritized carrying over cap space and maximizing draft picks and not winning. Like, a winning program does not draft two quarterbacks in rounds 3 and 5. A program that is committed to winning picks its quarterback and moves on and doesn't, well, this is an asset for us. So forget about that. You're trying to win football games. You're trying to create an atmosphere where you can win football games. So taking four quarterbacks to camp, four that are competing for the starting job, not just, you know, three in a camp arm, I think that's a mistake. Taking four into the regular season, which they reportedly are serious about doing, that's a mistake. Taking four past the trade deadline, that's a mistake. It's less about winning, and it's more about, oh, we really want to get the most we can for that one guy that we otherwise would cut.
Mike Florio joining us from Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports. Quinshon Judkins looked like the guy who is going to get the chance to be the Nick Chubb replacement and maybe even play that big of a role on this team. And now he's not under contract. He has legal issues. He's sitting out. I would assume, I think we're all assuming there's a suspension on the way from the NFL. Mike, how big of a suspension is that going to be? And how much trouble do you think this young guy's in right now?
Well, it's a two-step process beyond the pending legal situation. You've got the suspension that will be imposed once the criminal case is over. Then you've got the very real possibility of paid leave. And for him to consciously not sign his contract and not show up, and it's unrelated to how much is going to be guaranteed, he's focusing on the legal case, it makes sense, because if he does show up with a signed contract, there's a very good chance they're going to do to him what they did to Mike Hall last year and say, you're on the paid leave list until we're in a position to resolve this once and for all. And the circumstances put pressure on Judkins to plead guilty to something, to accept whatever punishment the criminal justice system is going to give him, and then accept whatever punishment the NFL proposes, and not do the whole Sue Robinson, Deshaun Watson, full-blown hearing that takes weeks to unfold. Just do a deal with the league the way Justin Tucker did. He did a deal with the league, and it was done. So Judkins needs to resolve his criminal case. He needs to work out a deal with the league, and then he'll know how many games he's going to miss to start the season, and he'll come back. And I hate to make it that transactional, but look, he did what he did or he didn't do what he did. I don't know. We have a police report, and we have photographic evidence that was given to the authorities that would support a conclusion that he did something he shouldn't have done. Whatever it is, he needs to work it out. And I think if he shows up today and signs a contract, he'll be put on paid leave until he does work it out. So why not just go ahead and get it worked out?
Are the Browns a 5-win team or better, or are they 5 wins and lower?
It's impossible to know, because every team changes throughout the course of the season. Injuries have a huge impact, whether they're injuries that happen to you or injuries that happen to the teams that you play. They're good enough to be a better than 5-win team. They're good enough to be a playoff team. It's just a lot of things that have to fall into place. And right now we don't know. That's part of the fun. We have no idea what's going to happen with any team. Now, I mean, the problem is, despite this age of parity that we now occupy, there's a small handful of teams that we suspect are going to be standing as the dust settles. So the Browns aren't one of those teams that we look at and say, oh, well, they'll definitely be there. But you can play your way into it. You know, just like they say you can play your way into primetime, you can play your way in to high-level contention. And, you know, the Bengals in 2021, I thought there was no chance they'd make the playoffs, and they almost won the Super Bowl. The Texans 2 years ago, I would assume there's no way. I would have sworn, I would have bet, and I don't bet, and this is one of the reasons why you shouldn't bet. No way they make the playoffs, and they won the division. So it's not crazy. But when you look at the competition, you look at the other teams, you look at the division, you look at the quarterback situation with the Bengals, the Ravens, and the Steelers, yeah, I mean, it's all adding up to the Browns being last place. And they're going to need a lot of luck and a lot of bad breaks for those other teams, which are good breaks for them if they're not going to be the fourth place team in the AFC North.
Mike, what do you think of Nick Chubb in Houston? Joe Mixon's there. They've got an interesting young team. Do you think Nick gets an opportunity to show he's healthy, or is he going to be a backup to Joe Mixon?
I think he'll get a chance to play and contribute. You know, for running backs, if you're anything lower than second on the depth chart, they expect you to play special teams, and they're not going to expect Nick Chubb to play special teams. So he's in there to be, you know, 1-2 punch with Joe Mixon, and it's also a kind of a lower risk proposition. And you know, you bring in a guy who hasn't done a whole lot of winning. I always say with Super Bowl champions, there's value in bringing in a veteran who's never won a Super Bowl, who will kind of keep you from getting complacent and will want to get his own championship. I guess this is kind of a lower level idea. You've got a guy who's rarely been on a competitive team. Now with a team that's a consistent division winner, I mean, this really may draw a lot out of Nick Chubb, and he's missed so much time after that horrible knee injury. I saw it happen live. I'm amazed he ever came back. And it's a low-risk, high-reward move for the Texans.
Mike, I want to ask you another one of this. We've kind of haven't really touched on this today, so I just want to ask you this because I think you'll have a better feel for it. Is there any way Washington, D.C. doesn't get a new stadium if they don't change the name back?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Look, They may not get a new stadium if they would change the name back in D.C. The D.C. Council has been dragging their feet, and now the window's open for both Maryland and Virginia to come to the table with their offers. The president, and I saw this coming. The moment that there was a suggestion that the team might go to the president to try to get D.C. Council to approve the deal that's already in place, I thought, boy, what's going to happen if he says change the name as a condition to him helping out? So at the end of the day, if they have to choose between keeping the name or getting a stadium at the site of RFK and being back in D.C., you know, deep down, and this is something they're never going to admit, they may want to change the name. And they may want to be able to say, we only did it because we had to. We only did it because we had to do it to get our stadium. Because they flirt with it. They dance right up to the line. They introduced uniforms that match the uniforms from the 80s. And when they unveiled those a couple of weeks ago, the old logo was all over the videos. And the way they took the photographs of the players, they had their heads turned in a way where you couldn't see the W on the side. So it looked just like the old uniforms. I feel like they do things from time to time. They're just kind of testing the waters for an eventual change back to the original name. And if you got the commander-in-chief saying to the Commanders, you must change your name back or you don't get your new stadium, they may say, oh boy, that's a shame we have to do it, and deep down be thinking, yeah, we wanted to do it. Thank you, President, for giving us the cover to do what we wanted to do.
It's an interesting. I thought it was also interesting in the article on Pro Football Talk that you said the Guardians, you know, stood up to President Trump on that too. I was like, oh, that's interesting, because I think there are, you know, obviously that's a hot topic here too in Cleveland too.
Commanders are hiding under the bed, and look, between the two names, I don't think Indians needs to change. I think the reason that the old Washington name had to go is language had evolved to the point where it was and is a dictionary defined slur. Indians isn't. Blackhawks isn't. The other teams out there with Native American-based names, it's not something that you look at it and say, that's probably not a word we should be using. That's the only team that's got that connotation as it relates to Native American names and imagery. And I didn't even have a problem with the logo. It was the name. It just got to a point where it's like, in this day and age, you know, there's all sorts of words that we could say and get fired for right now that you would have said 30, 40, 50 years ago, and it wouldn't have been a problem. Language changes. We evolve. And that word ended up being just a victim of the natural evolution of the language. So it's that simple. And but hey, if the Indians want to be the Guardians, that's their prerogative. And I respect them for saying, thanks, President, but we're good, especially when the Commanders are hiding under the bed hoping this all goes away.
All right, Mike, thank you. Tell me one more time, Big Shield, how can we get it?
Big Shield is out August 19. I have stuck to my New Year's resolution that all of the e-books that I sell, all of the e-book novels are 99 cents on Amazon. Print version's $14.99. So you can pre-order it now, and it'll show up, boom, on the 19th. You may even forget about it by the 19th. So just pre-order it now, 99 cents. There's nothing you can find for 99 cents. And as I say, if you read it and hate it, I'll give you your 99 cents. I'll make it an even dollar. I'll send you a $1 bill, but you have to convince me you read it, and there will be a test to convince, and I alone decide whether you actually read it. There is no Cliff Notes version to read.
It's all about that penny.
That's awesome.
Mike, thank you. Good luck with the book. We will be talking to you soon. Thank you,
Michael. Thank you.